भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So today we are reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 12, chapter entitled Devotional Service, text number 1.
Arjuna vacha evam satatayuktaye bhaktastvam paryupasate ye chapya aksharam avyaktam tesham ke yoga viktamah.
Translation: Arjuna inquired, which are considered to be more perfect? Those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested? So, in the 11th chapter, we have seen that how Lord Krishna has revealed his universal form, the Virat Rupa. Then, on Arjuna's request, he shows his four-handed form, and finally, he manifests himself in his original two-handed form. So Krishna has shown all the forms in the 11th chapter, of which it is quite possible that many would be influenced by the vision of the Virat Roop. It is so huge, so big. Just like there may be a small shop, a small grocery shop with all the necessary items that one may require for our daily needs. And there is a huge mall which also contains, or which can also have, the ingredients that we may need for our daily needs. Given a choice, what would one take? Where would one go? Let's suppose there are no extra fees charged. It's almost the same rates. The mall seems to be more attractive, isn't it? Or let's suppose another example is we go into a shop and we find a particular item of our need. It is available, you know, khula or unpacked. Right? Everyone knows khula. It is unpacked and it is available. They'll maybe give it in your hand, wrap it up in some small piece of paper, tie it up with a thread and give it to you. And there is the same item available in packaged form, and the same item is available in a very decorative and a huge package, like a gift box. Now, there may be a little difference in price, maybe one anna or one paisa or something like that, at the most. Now, if one has sufficient money, Where do you think we'll invest our money in? Which particular item are we going to buy? Now let us say we've gone to buy biscuits. So one is the khula biscuits, you know. They're just available in that jar. You can pick up 2 biscuits. Or you can pick up 10 for that matter. Or you could take a box, a package of 10. Or you could have this beautiful, beautifully wrapped gift box packed packet of biscuit, same biscuit. Which item are you going to place your, are you going to spend your money on? Anyone here? Sorry? The packed one, isn't it? Generally, whenever I ask this question, I receive the same answer. The answer that is expected is you're going to spend your money on biscuits, nothing else. The question asked was which item you're going to spend your money on. The next question then would be, in what format? How would you like to get it purchased? Yes? So generally, as one or two of the courageous ones here, they volunteered, the packed ones. The others just are waiting. Let us see what the speaker says. Supposing it were for free, which one would we go for first? Why is it? Because we always feel that the bigger the better. It may contain just 10 biscuits, but with it may be packaged with lot of or maybe paper inside or something else. You have to just remove the packaging and they remove off the extra packaging and then finally you find the biscuit packet inside. It is a lot of hard work. But it is attractive. Why? Because one feels in this bigger package we'll get something more. Yes, one does get extra paper, which one can throw in the dustbin. And thus, the municipal corporation also has some work to do because we discard so much waste. So in this way, the economy keeps running. But let us look at it very intelligently. Why is it that one is attracted by something big? Because within it, there is some idea that big means more. Something more will be there. So Krishna has shown his big form, the Virat Roop. Everything is within that form, the universal form. Then he shows his four-handed form, which at least looks a little bulky. And then he shows his two-handed form. Now in his four-handed form, at least he's holding the conch, the discus. He has his club. He has his lotus flower. But two-handed form is only holding a flute. Now, if someone has no idea of Krishna's prowess, what would be the general, the tendency towards which form would one gravitate? The big one, isn't it? Because the big one contains hundreds of faces, hundreds of gods, hundreds of arms, 200s of weapons. So I will be offered better protection in this form. So that has been done in the 11th chapter. The 11th chapter also has shown Krishna as the source of everything. Material and also spiritual forms. His four-handed form also Krishna revealed. And he showed the entire material creation within the universal form. So he's shown himself as a source of everything. Arjuna is asking this question because he wants to establish one. Which is the form that is the original form of Krishna? And would Krishna's two-handed form be as complete or be equivalent to the universal form or not? Actually, he wants to establish something more, but the question is being asked in that format to establish. We are not going to touch the answer as yet today. Today, we are just going to stick to the question part. Arjuna is asking this question because he wants to establish whether the two-handed form of Krishna, which is his original form, whether it is sufficient vis-a-vis or in comparison to his universal form or in comparison to his form which contains everything and which is one with everything. Now this form, particular form of Krishna, this particular feature of Krishna is known as his impersonal feature, or it is known as an impersonal feature of the absolute truth. Now for those who are trying to understand absolute truth, it has been recommended that we understand the absolute truth in three levels. The lowest level of understanding, or the primary level of understanding, is that the absolute truth is spread all over. Everything has been permeated by the absolute truth. God is everywhere. In the form of his energy, in the form of his potency, there's nothing that God does not see, touch, pervade. Everything has been pervaded by him, within the atom and without. Now this particular level of understanding of the absolute truth is called Brahman platform. And a person who understands the absolute truth at that level is known as a Brahmavadi. Someone who has understood the Brahman feature. The secondary level, or higher than the primary level of understanding the absolute truth, is known as the Paramatma realization. That God is not only pervading somewhere, but he is a personality by his potency is pervading everything. And where does he exist? He exists in each one of us as the Paramatma. So this, to some extent, is the localized aspect of God within all of us. And in fact, this localized aspect of God is also present within the atom itself, and in between the atoms too. Those who understand the absolute truth on this platform are known as the Paramatmavadis. And the highest level, or the higher secondary, or complete understanding of the absolute truth is Bhagavan platform, or Bhagavan realization. Only when one has understood or accepted the Bhagavan realization can one sit for the board exam. You cannot sit for the board exam at primary level, I mean the senior secondary board exam. That is when you graduate. So material nature has also arranged the graduation process like this. Those who are educated on the primary level, they are the Brahmavadis. They need to go to the secondary level, the Paramatmavadis, who need to go to the tertiary or the senior secondary or the higher secondary level, and then they become qualified to sit for the board exam. And what is the board exam? Antakalecha maam eva smaran. That has happened, we have discussed this in the previous verses. Will you remember the answer at the time the question paper comes in or not? Will all of us remember the answer or not? It is all just one question and one answer is expected. And one cannot beat around the bush. So, antakalecha maam eva smaran. Will we remember this answer? Will we remember Krishna? So the Brahmavadis find it very difficult to remember Krishna at the time of death. How can they remember Krishna? Because the primary level of education does not allow them to understand the features of Krishna. So where is the question of remembering Krishna? They are trying to search Krishna amongst his potency. Is he here? Is he here? What is Krishna? So they write an elaborate essay which completely misses the point. So it fills up pages. But all it results is in a big zero. Yeah, they have to once again sit for the exam in another birth. The Paramatmavadis, they hint at the answer. But they cannot exactly remember the terminology, the heading, or the description of it. So they get grace marks. Alright, you get grace marks, you'll get another chance to develop further when you can develop your emotions while realizing the features of God or Bhagavan. The Paramatmavadis do not have their emotions sufficiently developed. So they will be given a chance wherein the expert teachers will come into them and say, alright, we'll take classes for you now. Sit down. So they get a chance to associate with devotees. The Brahmavadis, they have to still make a choice whether they want to associate with devotees or not. But the highest platforms, those are those who are on the Bhagavan platform. When they clear the examination, when they give the answer, they remember Krishna. Then Krishna says, you enter into my spiritual abode. Never to come back into this material world again. Jai Shri Radha Gopinath Lalita Vishakha Devi Ji ki jai. Nitai Gauchandra ki jai. Shri Gopal Nath Ji ki jai. So first, they enter the spiritual world within this realm, where they get sufficient training, and they enter the spiritual world in the other realm, the Paravyom. So all these three levels, those who are trying to understand the Absolute Truth, at all these three levels, all of them are called as transcendentalists. Sri Prabhupada in the first purport, he begins that with saying there are two kinds of transcendentalists. Those who believe in the personal feature of God, have faith in it, and render service unto the personal feature of Godhead. And there are the impersonalists who accept the impersonal feature of God and think this is the topmost destination. And either they accept everything as a impersonal feature of God and thus think everything is the same, everything included is Absolute Truth, or they think that everything ultimately merges into one Absolute Truth. So those who think that everything is actually sum total is Absolute Truth, they become the pantheists. You worship soil, you worship earth, you worship air, or you worship deity, you worship personal feature. Everything sum total is the Absolute Truth. And the others, who are the impersonal monotheists, because they believe in just one, the impersonal aspect is that everything merges, including our own consciousness. It also merges into the one. Ultimately, both of them will try to merge their consciousness either into the total sum as pantheism. They'll try to merge themselves into the universal Virat form, or they'll try to merge themselves into the effulgence of the Lord. Right? So Arjuna wants to know, he is asking from Krishna, please tell me of these two, one who is trying to merge into your existence and second who is trying to serve you eternally, of these two, which is actually Vittamaha, who is more intelligent, who has perfect knowledge? And having that perfect knowledge, yoga, who is perfectly connected with you? Or who has perfect understanding of the Absolute Truth? Is it the personalist or is it the impersonalist? So the impersonalists think that they have an understanding of God. Now in the purports, as I said today, it will be very difficult for me to, because most of us who have read the Bhagavad Gita know the answer. But today we are just going to stick to 12.1. And we have to wait for Krishna tomorrow to give the answer. And it's going to be a little difficult task. So I need you to be with me. No, we just have to be there. All right. Just to lighten up the atmosphere. Generally, the impersonalist is always in the mood of, you know, let us be silent, quiet. And the personalists are always very active. They are always in tension. Because you seek the attention of God. So they always are in this tension. How? What should we do to serve Krishna more? This festival, should we put up a peacock feather for him? Should we serve, prepare nice dishes for him? Should we make nice dresses for him? Should we invite the devotees to have his darshan? Should we have a cradle for him? Should we make a festival of his boat pastimes? So there is constant tension. But this tension is loved. When the tension is there, there is some strain, but it is out of love. Impersonalists avoid that. They say, no tension and no attention from Krishna. Right? Let us just concentrate on what we think is the absolute, the impersonal. And impersonal is quiet. We are quiet. Everything is one. So once upon a time, a policeman, he caught a burglar, a thief. And he was trying to arrest him, putting his handcuffs and reading his rights to him. The burglar mentioned, I practice yoga. I practice silent meditation. Policeman said, all right, you have the right to remain silent. So, generally, even if we take this as a joke, the impersonal is because they are not properly situated, they somehow or the other make a mistake of not understanding God in its totality. And therefore, the laws of nature, they approach the impersonalists and handcuff them in the three modes of material nature and say, you have the right to remain silent. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. So that is the impersonal path. The impersonalists, they take up sometimes to the process of personal worship. Because they know without personal worship it is not possible. Once Srila Prabhupada had gone to one of the European countries and there was some lecture organized for him in one of the halls. So he gave a short lecture and then he said, Kirtan. And everyone said, no, sorry, not in the European country. It was right here in India. He said, Kirtan. And crowds, thousands of them had come to attend this festival. And they were just, everyone was standing and dancing and chanting Hare Krishna. The other speakers knew that. I mean, the show has already been stolen now. There's no use for us to speak. But they needed to speak. They had come there to speak. So the next speaker, when he came, he had this big, his features were big hairs and stark saffron, very reddish saffron dress. And he had this, his head was completely, he had swiped all of his fingers over his head like you swiped a credit card like that. So all the impressions were there, right across of all the dust that he had applied to his head, the ashes. And he came and he started, Om Shanti Paramatma, Om Shanti Paramatma, Akhilatma. And he was trying to make a kirtan of all of these words. He had never done kirtan in his life. But then he saw that the crowd loved kirtan. So the only words that he knew was Shanti, Paramatma, Akhilatma or something like that. So he tried to combine all of that into doing a kirtan right on stage. And half the people were shocked as, what is he doing? And the remaining half were trying to keep their laughter inside. Because in India you try to respect the sadhus. So the impersonalists really aren't sure how much is too much and how much is too less. Whether we should accept some personal worship, is this too much, is this too less? They're always feeling a little insecure. Are we sufficiently protected, secure in a practice or not? Because what is the extent of the impersonal existence? They have no idea. So there was once an impersonalist, or someone who had some impersonalistic tendency, and he had climbed up a tree. The tree was maybe 20 feet high, and he had to reach a branch which was 15 feet above the ground. So he was on that branch, and suddenly the branch cracked and he was falling down. So as he was falling down, he caught the underhanging branch, the branch that was under him, and he was hanging there around 12 feet above the ground. He knew if he left the branch, he was going to break some bone somewhere. So in desperation, he called out, "God, please save me, please save me, God." Now, he had some impersonalistic tendency, but he could not say, "Oh, all pervading light, please save me." So he called out, "God, please save me, God, please save me, oh God." And suddenly, because he was crying so fervently, the clouds parted. And there was this deafening voice which said, "Let go of the branch." This man was so shocked. For a moment, he was stunned. He did not believe what he had heard. Then he looked up into the sky, saw those parted clouds, and he said, "Is there someone else up there? Is there actually someone up there?" So that is the impersonalist. When they are faced, when they are in danger, where they seek help from God, and when they receive some help, their whole philosophy is challenged. Actually, there is someone more powerful who can actually hear me and reach out to me. Like this man who calls out, "Is there actually someone up there?" So how is it that someone in the purport Srila Prabhupada is going to explain in these lines, he explains how in the Bhagavad Gita every chapter actually hints at the personal feature of God. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord explained that a living entity is not the material body, he is a spiritual spark. Now one can clearly see in the universal form, everything is that which is within this material world. The entire universal form is composed of all the material elements. In the second chapter itself, Krishna has hinted that a living entity is not the material body but a spiritual spark, which indicates that ultimately the spirit soul has to surrender oneself to the Supreme Spirit, who is manifesting the universal form containing all the material elements. Then Srila Prabhupada says, "And the absolute truth is a spiritual whole." In the seventh chapter, he spoke of the living entity as being part and parcel of the supreme whole and recommended that he transfer his attention fully to the absolute. In the eighth chapter again, it was said that anyone who thinks of Krishna at the time of quitting his body is at once transferred to the spiritual sky, to the abode of Krishna. And at the end of the sixth chapter, the Lord clearly said that of all yogis, one who always thinks of Krishna within himself is considered the most perfect. So in practically every chapter, the conclusion has been that one should be attached to the personal form of Krishna, for that is the highest spiritual, realization. It is the highest spiritual realization. So in his purport to this first verse itself, Srila Prabhupada is preparing us for Krishna's answer, which is going to come from verse number 2 onwards, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. So this is, he's like a wonderful interface. The Guru is a beautiful interface between the confused living entity and the all-knowing, all-loving Supreme Absolute Truth. Srila Prabhupada is trying to act as an interface such that we can receive Krishna's answer properly, in the proper mood. So, every chapter according to Srila Prabhupada says, concludes that one must surrender to the personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There was once a man who was very much concerned about his son's future career, because son was not doing anything. He had given up his job and he was just sitting at home doing nothing. So one day he met his friend, and his friend inquired of him, "How's your son doing? Is he doing some job?" He said, "No, he's still not doing any job. I'm very much concerned about him." A few days later, again they met. He said, "So how's your son doing?" He says, "Oh, my son is practicing silent meditation now. He's trying to meditate on the absolute whole that is spread everywhere. It is light." So he asked him, "What is that? What is such a type of meditation? Can you explain it to me more clearly? I'm not able to understand what you're saying." So the father said, "Actually, even I don't know what that is. But it is better than his sitting and doing nothing. So at least, those who are on the impersonal path, they're better off than those who are doing nothing. But doesn't mean that what they are doing is actually very sensible. Because not many people understand. Like the father here says, I don't know. But at least it is better than him sitting and doing nothing." So here Srila Prabhupada is explaining to us that how the best form of activity is to serve the personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because every chapter of Bhagavad Gita concludes with this understanding. The living entity has been born in the dense darkness of ignorance. I mean, rarely do you find someone been born and saying, you know, "All right, I am spirit soul and you are all, you know, just attachments for me. I'm leaving." Do you find any child, you know? The child has to learn language of communication. Maybe there was one like Shukdev Maharaj who just, as soon as he was born, he left. But then he was already 16 years old within the womb. We don't find any incidents of that. Why? Because we are born in the darkness of ignorance. So an example has been given to explain. Srila Prabhupada gives this example to explain the three features of the absolute truth. He says, just as someone may see the countryside from a distance with its fields and its mountains and the clouds, from a distance everything appears to be hazy, gray and almost indistinct. But we know that it is there. Something is there on the horizon. Similarly, in the beginning stages of self-realization, which is the impersonal stage, the practitioner begins to understand something is there. Beyond the material realm, there is something. There is some substance, there is some existence beyond the material realm. Then as soon as a person starts taking steps towards these mountains, towards these hills in the distance, towards the fields in the distance, slowly, the closer as one gets to these places, one can see the features that are there distinctly. This is the shape of the hill. It is like a lion. And this is how the fields are. Some of them appear to be covered up. Some of them appear to be empty from a distance. They seem to be empty of plants. Some seem to be full of plants. So some features can be understood now. So as one makes progress more on the spiritual path, from the platform of impersonal realization, one comes to some personal aspects. Some specific features are noted, like the Paramatmas. Paramatma within the heart. The Paramatmavadi noticed that, oh, this is the outline. This is how the Lord is existing within the heart. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of everything. And then one enters the fields and finds, oh, this is a corn field. This is a paddy field. This was a sugarcane field. The sugarcane has been cut. And the mountains he sees, oh, there is a cherry tree here on the mountain. There's a guava tree there up. Oh, there is a ditch here, a hole in the ground. There's a big rock protruding a little up. So all the features are clearly seen when one enters into the field and enters into the mountainous grounds. The grounds or the soil of the mountain, the slopes of the mountain, the hill. Similarly, when one enters into the realm of rendering devotional service on the platform as one progresses on the path of spiritual realization, then one sees Krishna's various features, one sees Krishna's potencies in the spiritual world, one sees how devotees are offering service to Krishna, one sees the spiritual world itself. There are trees, there are rivers, there are peacocks, there are birds of various colors, there are mountains, planets, beautiful beings, and then there is Krishna himself. Another example that is given is of a train coming from a distance. Initially, only the sound is heard. Ah, train is coming. But a train is not sound. After some time, you see the headlight. Light in the distance, you think, oh, the train is sound plus light. No, that is not complete. Then you see the coaches coming in. You say, achcha, achcha, it is engine plus coach. And then you see people in the train. So, simply understanding the energetic form of the train in the form of sound and light is like the Brahman platform. That is just one aspect of the train. Then seeing the coaches is like thinking that, achcha, this is all the train is. But the train is not just coaches, not just wood and iron and sound and light. It is much more. It is meant to transport people. Otherwise, why a train should be there? Similarly, there is Brahman, which is the energetic form, energy of the Lord spread everywhere. Then Paramatma, the specific form of the Lord within the heart and within each atom. But the Paramatma form of the Lord or the personal form of the Lord can reciprocate. Just like people talk with each other, people have reciprocations with each other. Similarly, when that personal feature of the Lord starts reciprocating and we start reciprocating with him, that is the Bhagwan platform. There we understand the Lord totally, in totality. Why is the impersonal aspect so very attractive and prevalent? Why would someone become attracted to that? One reason given is when the impersonal aspect is manifested as this huge universal form, it is so huge. It has such an impact on a practitioner that one thinks, oh my God, this is so big, this must be it. Right? Just imagine, you know, there is a play going on stage and two ants are fighting. I mean, you'll actually have to carry microscopes and maybe lenses and then enjoy the fight, isn't it? Because when they are fighting, you don't even realize they are fighting. It's as if they're coming together and they talk to each other and go away. On the same stage, now you find two men fighting. Attractive. People gather around. Kya chal raha hai bhai? Now imagine two huge wild elephants fighting on stage. Can you imagine how much attention they'll capture? On one part side, you know, there's a stage with men fighting. The other side, there is huge elephants fighting. Where do you think the rush will be more? You know, their heads cracking to the crack, making a huge sound, and they're trumpeting loudly. Do you think anyone will go to see even if they are good martial artists? Because this huge form captures your attention. So similarly, living entity has lost complete understanding of how Krishna, as a small boy, lifts up the Govardhan hill, which is actually a magnificent act. But the faith that it can be done, or it is actually very attractive, right now may be a little shaky. However, the universal form seems to be something acceptable. I can see a typhoon coming, I can see an earthquake coming. This is just one aspect of the universal form. Oh, this is great. This is God. God's hand. So that could be, that is one of the reasons why one becomes very much attracted or distracted in one sense. The another aspect why one becomes distracted by the impersonal form is, supposing, you know, you keep your eyes covered with your hands in darkness for just, let's say, a couple of minutes, even for 5 minutes. And ask someone to put up a 1,000-watt bulb right in front of you. Or maybe those floodlights that light up a cricket stadium in a day-night match. You know, all those floodlights, hundreds of them, each one maybe 100,000 watt or maybe more power, more wattage. Let all of them be put in front of us, and we have covered our eyes, therefore we don't know. And suddenly someone says, remove your hands, you open your eyes, what do you see? You see nothing except brightness. Or someone is in a deep dark cave for a couple of days, and suddenly he's pulled out and there is intense sunlight. The first thing that a person does is try to cover his eyes. Oh my God, too much light, too much light. And then slowly through the light one tries to see, eyes get adjusted, but for some time all we can see is light. Similarly, when a living entity in the dense darkness of ignorance suddenly is faced with the absolute truth, please God, cover up your dark. There's too much light, too much light, too much light. Because the effulgence of Krishna has been compared to millions of suns shining together. Millions of suns. And millions is just a number to make us imagine something. Actually, millions is insignificant compared to Krishna's effulgence. Therefore, when the practitioner on spiritual life is exposed to the absolute truth and does not have a proper guide who can give him, you know, just like in an eclipse, they give you, please wear the special glasses. Because the radiations are so powerful, sent out from the margins of the moon, the sun's radiations are so sharp, they can burn up the retina. So they give you special glasses, which allow you to see. Similarly, there are spiritual guides who give us proper vision, which allow us to see beyond and not be affected by the light. But many of us who do not have proper understanding, or do not have the proper guide, who have guides who have just been educated to the primary level of spiritual education, the Brahman realized guides or gurus, many of us who have that, when we are faced with this bright light, it is so overpowering, we think we've reached Nirvana. This is it. Another example which makes us understand is, a person is very sick, very sick, very sick. So much of fever and vomiting, pain, headache, aches, goes to the hospital. Treatment takes place. Any number of pins that are put in the body, nothing matters, because those pins don't prick you. The needles don't prick you at all. The pain all over the body is so great that you don't even understand they have been pricked. Then slowly you get well. And as you get well and there's a feeling of wellness coming, then you start noticing even the slightest of pain. Then you call the nurse at every given moment. This pillow is too hard. Right? And this IV line is paining me. Please change it. Isn't it? However, if one has been, especially let us take the case of intense stomach ache and vomiting. If one has been exposed to that, even when one is aware of some little pain and there's a feeling of wellness, which is called the period of convalescence, one is recovering from the illness, one is getting better, someone offers you the best of the drinks or offers you the best of the food, the things that you like the most, what are you going to say? Anyone from you, what will be your response? You know, just 4 days back, you ate 20 rasgullas, landed up with food poisoning because they had been spoiled and they had fungus all over inside them. You never knew that because the mava was all gone. It was all spoiled. And you got food poisoning, there's intense vomiting, there is septicemia in your blood, there is fever, aches, you're writhing in pain. When you come to the hospital, they pump you with so many medicines, you get well. Then they get you rasgullas or gulab jamuns. What are you going to say? Any response? Anyone courageous enough to give a response? You'll say no. Any other response? We'll take later. Yeah. I would have said keep it in the fridge. But jokes apart, the first thing is not now, please. Because the pain that is the pain that we had gone through is very, very fresh in our minds. And we know what caused the pain. The doctors confirmed it also. Did you eat bad rasgullas? So you are very wary of again eating it. Someone comes into your room and says, so how do you feel now? You say, I feel well. I feel better. Now, is that really well or better? How are you feeling better if you cannot eat the thing that you like the most? But the idea is, I feel better because no longer there is any aches, pains or vomiting. Similarly, when the impersonalists, they come to the platform of this intense effulgence of the light of the Lord, that is beyond the three modes. Brahma Bhuta platform. No longer any pain, no longer any material miseries. There is actually a feeling of happiness. The happiness of being free from miseries. But it is not actually the feeling of actual happiness. There is actually a feeling of happiness. We are not negating, we are not saying there is no happiness. Please mind you, there is actually a feeling of happiness. But it is not complete happiness or actual happiness or total happiness or pleasure. Why? Because there has been no experience of activities which can give us pleasure. This has been only a feeling or a realization of that which does not give us misery. So it is like a period of convalescence. But then we have to get out of the period of convalescence and become healthy and start eating rasgullas because that is what we like. Good rasgullas, obviously. So the personal feature of God means we come out of this stage of disease, beyond the stage of convalescence, of material life, beyond all the distractions of the impersonal feature, and engage in the activity of eating or activity of performing sweet service, devotional service unto the personal feature of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada also gives the example of sun. So sunlight is sufficient for someone who thinks that sunlight is equivalent to the sun. In the sense, if someone is in the room and you know the day dawns and light comes in. So someone who's satisfied saying, oh, the sun has risen up because the light has come here, so it is the sun has come up. That is all right. The room has been lighted up. But complete understanding of the sun will be when we, or further understanding of the sun will be when we go out and actually see the sun globe, the morning sun rising. Now that saffron, pinkish, reddish, orangish, red bloom coming up on the horizon, the pleasure of seeing that, compare it to just sitting in a room and seeing the sunlight coming in. There's a difference, vast difference. So, just understanding the impersonal feature of the Lord is understanding the absolute truth as a person who understands the sun by simply seeing the daylight illuminating his room. But we need to understand, to have more pleasure, to have more experience in relationship with the sun, if we go out and see the wonderful sun globe rising above the horizon with its different features, and then you see birds going across that silhouette. You capture it on camera and you get a good prize for the best camera photo someone has done, you know. Or you see it rising among the trees and it's so beautiful. Or just above the ocean, it's so beautiful. What would be the happiness enjoyed if you could go into the sun planet and actually participate without being burned? Experience the totality of the heat of the sun. Experience the totality of the light of the sun and whatever else the sun has to offer. Just imagine that adventure that is awaiting all of us. Similar adventure awaits a transcendentalist when he approaches a personal feature of God. It's an ongoing adventure, continuous, on and on and on, eternally. Once a person was searching for some spiritual truth, so there were many shops which were advertising their spiritual formulas, what is going on inside. And do you know what was advertised on the shop where impersonalism was being spoken on? Vagueness spoken here. That was a sign outside. Vague. We do not know what the impersonal is. It is vast. It is mighty. It is all inconceivable. It is there. But then, you won't be, unless and until you merge into it, you cannot understand the totality of it, because the totality is you but not you, which cannot be spoken but it exists. At the same time, it does not exist. So vagueness exists here. It is not like personal feature of God. This is Krishna. He's standing in his threefold bending form. This is Srimati Radharani. You come on Radhashtami, celebrate her birthday. You come on Janmashtami, celebrate his birthday. Have a nice time. Is there anything vague about it? Someone asks you, where are you going? I'm going to see the impersonal. See the impersonal? I'm going to hear about the all per... How can you hear about the all pervading? Right? You can hear few drops of rain falling. You can hear one ocean wave after the other. But can you hear something that is all pervading? Because something that pervades all does not make noise. It's finished. So there is vagueness there. Srila Prabhupada once went to Amritsar to participate in a conference. It was a sammelan, a gathering where the Bhagavad Gita was being honored, in honor of Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada went with his disciples, and when he went there, he went on stage and just a few minutes, and then walked off stage, and none of the other speakers had come. He was the only speaker that had come. So the organizers, at least someone has come. You're actually wanting him to... Please, Swamiji, stay here. He said, I will not stay here. You have advertised Bhagavad Gita. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna's photograph? Or at least have... Prabhupada did not say it, but at least have a Bhagavad Gita there. All you have is a lamp, you know, burning there with light. So he said, no. Krishna is just one of the aspects of the impersonal feature. Prabhupada said, what nonsense. You say we are organizing a sammelan on the Bhagavad Gita, and the person who speaks on the Bhagavad Gita, you are not acknowledging him. And he walked off. Prabhupada said, I will not participate in this. So he went. That night they had to stay in Amritsar, devotees. And the organizers, they were a little baffled. And the person who was hosting the devotees, he knew Prabhupada was a great sadhu. So He welcomed Prabhupada in his room and he served him. But the other devotees, some of them had to find some accommodation, some or the other places, sometimes with other followers of other sadhus who were there. So Prabhupada's his senior disciple, Gurudas Prabhu, was sharing a room with an impersonalistic sadhu. So the sadhu looked at him and said, "Achcha, achcha, this person is a Westerner. Poor fellow, what does he know? Let me educate him." So he started educating him in the philosophy of how everything is one. Ultimately, you worship this, you worship that. Ultimately, everything is one and one must become one with the one. So Gurudas Prabhu, he had already heard from Prabhupada right in 1967 about impersonalists and their philosophy. The first thing they heard from Prabhupada was prasad. The second thing, almost the second subject matter they heard is that how impersonalism has destroyed the seed of devotion within the heart of every living entity. It is so dangerous. But then the sadhu was there and he was speaking, going on and on and on and on and on. In his accent, vague Indian accent. So ultimately Gurudas Prabhu, after hearing everything, he said, "Thank you, Babaji. So everything is one, isn't it? Whether you worship this, worship that, doesn't matter. It's all the same, isn't it?" He said, "Yes." So Amritsar, at that time, the Sammelan was being held in the month of December, somewhere around Gita Jayanti time. So Amritsar is very cold in December. Sometimes it falls below or somewhere around 0 degrees Celsius. So it's getting a little cold. So Gurudas Prabhu, he said, he took the blanket that was there with the sadhu and he put it on himself and went off to sleep. Now the sadhu was shocked. So he said, "Can I have my blanket back?" Gurudas Prabhu said, "Whether you put on blanket, no blanket, what does it matter? Everything is one after all." He said, No. "This is my blanket, give it to me." He said, "Okay." He took out one thread from the blanket. Blanket, thread. You put the thread inside, it merges, it becomes one. So there's no difference between this thread and the blanket. You take this thread and feel comfortable against the cold. I'll take the blanket and use it for myself. What could the sadhu do? The impersonalist, he had to. But for how long? So after some time he said, "I'm so sorry. I accept defeat. Please give my blanket back. Otherwise I'll freeze in this impersonal philosophy. Freeze to death." So not only is it vague, it is impractical also. It is impractical. Once a person, an impersonalistic yogi, came into a city and he saw this nice ice cream shop. Went inside, he saw strawberry flavor, vanilla flavor, chocolate flavor. So he turned to the person who was, you know, behind the bar and he said, "Make me one with everything." Impersonalist yogi, you know. "So make me one with everything." So he put the person, the bartender there, the ice cream wala there, he put one in of each scoop in everything and he gave it to him. It was 40 rupees. So the yogi, impersonalist yogi, took out 100 rupees and gave it to him. So he took the money and kept it inside. The yogi said, "What about my change?" So this person was a devotee. The ice cream wala was a devotee. So when he said, "Make me one with everything," he understood this is a impersonalist. So he took his money and did not return his 60 rupees back. So he asked him, "What about my change?" So the devotee said, "Change comes from within." Impersonalist philosophy. Within you change yourself, then you become one with everything. So it is very impractical. One must be very careful with this impersonalism. One point to consider is, Krishna is the giver of the fruits of all activities. He bestows the result of all the activities, the fruits of all the activities that we perform. So he gives the impersonalists their desire also. In the sense, if that is what they want, then Krishna will allow them to achieve their destination. Ultimately, they'll be frustrated. Aruya krichena padam patam param padam tata patante adana adritta smadangraha Bhagavatam says. They won't be satisfied because they have not achieved the topmost destination, so they'll fall back into this material world. But Krishna fulfills their desire. So point that is being made, that is made in some of the scriptural references is that Krishna gives everything else within this world much more easily, but devotional service he gives very rarely. You want mukti? Take it. You want siddhi? Take it. You want swargaloka? Take it. Obviously one has to work for it, so one, if one is qualified, one works. But bhakti Krishna very discriminately gives and very rare. There's one Puranic story where a man is being troubled by many problems. And Krishna, Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha is watching him and is really praying to God, please Lord Narayan, please Lord Narayan, protect me, protect me. And Lakshmi is asking him, today you're distracted, what is the problem? Lord Narayan says, one person is in distress, is calling to me. Then Lakshmi sees that Lord Narayan is, you know, he's not lying on his bed. He's sitting up. She says, my dear Lord, why are you sitting up? He's calling for me. He's calling for me. And the devotee is really one problem after another. He says, Lord Narayan, please protect me. Please protect me. Finally, it comes to a stage where Lord Narayan gets up and is leaving Vaikuntha. And Lakshmi is asking, where are you going? He says, my devotee is... No. And he says, actually, my devotee is calling me. He's calling me. And as he's about to leave on his carrier, on Garuda Dev, suddenly Lord Narayan turns and comes back and again sleeps. Lakshmi says, why did you stop? Lord Narayan says, just see what he's doing. Until now, this devotee was simply folding his hands and he was praying, please protect me, please save me, please save me. But now, he had taken up some means to protect himself. Lord Narayan said, he doesn't need my help anymore. So let him protect himself. Till now, I was caring about him because he was totally helpless. But as soon as he took up some means to protect himself, which means he doesn't need my help anymore. Impersonalists have given up so much of material enjoyment in this world. They have given up sense gratification. They have controlled their mind. They have rejected the pleasures of this world totally, completely. They've taken up even to the process of personal worship of the Lord. And finally, when the Lord is about to get up, Lakshmi is asking, where are you going? The impersonalist says, all right, I don't need you anymore. So Lord Narayan just comes back and sits. And where do the impersonalists go? Patantiyada. They again fall back to the material pool. So Krishna does not give devotional service very easily, because when Krishna gives devotional service, he actually gives himself. And when he gives himself, then Krishna is in trouble. Like there is this famous story about Arjuna in Mahabharata taking the promise. Jayadrath, I will kill tomorrow, or I'll enter the fire before, if I do not do so before sunset. And after making this very grave and, you know, almost mind-boggling promise, wow, Arjuna goes out to sleep. And Krishna is very much agitated. Arjuna is going off to sleep. How will he be protected tomorrow? Definitely the Kauravas will do everything to destroy him. They will try to protect Jayadrath. In the whole evening, I don't think so, even Arjuna is capable of reaching him. So Krishna comes up to Arjuna and says, why are you sleeping? I am so tense. Why are you sleeping? Arjuna says, well, you gave the promise that you will protect your devotee. So why should I worry? So when Krishna gives himself to his devotee, Krishna's worries start. And Krishna is Rasaraj. He likes to enjoy. He doesn't like to worry much. Krishna does not worry, but it is a devotional mood. What is Krishna's worry? how to give pleasure to my devotee more and more and more. So when the impersonal is asked, Krishna, give me mukti, Krishna says, take Baba, take. But bhakti, I have to really see whether you're qualified enough to receive me totally or not. Because once I accept someone as my devotee, then I always take care of him. He becomes my personal property and I become his personal property. So devotional service, as Srila Prabhupada here is concluding, is the very essence of the Bhagavad Gita, the personal feature. However, we have spoken from the purpose of Srila Prabhupada. Let us hear what Krishna is going to answer. Why is Arjuna asking this question? One reason is because he wants to clarify it for all of us, isn't it? But another reason is very personal. Arjuna is a devotee at heart. And he's seen the universal form, which is awe-inspiring. So Arjuna is feeling, Bhaiya, jo main kar raha hu, theek hai ki nahi? I am worshipping Krishna's personal form, but this huge awe-inspiring feature was shown by Krishna. Many people are going to be attracted by it. So my worship of the personal feature of Krishna is all right or no? Is it topmost or no? Let me get it confirmed from Krishna himself. So he asked Krishna, Krishna, I am worshipping your personal form. Is it the topmost or not? Please tell me. That is why, Tesham ke yoga vittamaha. Which is the topmost Krishna? And Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking on a general principle to answer all our queries, but on the personal note to satisfy Arjuna. So tomorrow, Krishna is going to answer Arjuna's query of whether Arjuna is securely placed in his worship of Krishna's personal form, in his two-handed form or not. And tomorrow we'll be very fortunate to hear from Krishna's own mouth his reply. So please come and hear Krishna's reply to Arjuna's question to this verse. Thank you very, very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthara Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Itai Gaura Premanande.